All right, welcome everyone to Parshas Pinchas 5768. Last week, when we studied Balak, we opened up, or we attempted to return to a topic which we had introduced several years before, the topic of Klal Uprat, the general and the specific. We had begun to become aware that that was a very central theme in life, and particularly in the book of Bamidbar. I myself first became aware of this topic from a sefer called Patterns in Time, or in Hebrew, Livyas Chaim, written by Rav Matas Weinberg, the son of our revered Rosh Hashiva, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, whose yard site is the 17th of Tammuz, on Sunday, this coming Sunday. And I would like to read to you just an excerpt of that, so you can, if it is new to you, you can hopefully get into the idea. And basically I would like to continue that for one more week as we started last time. This book is really about Hanukkah, but it's about everything in the world. And this particular section, I think, may be the cornerstone of the book. This is chapter 5.4, A Soul Divided. Oh, by the way, I know it's Parshas Pinchas. We'll get to that. Within every individual reposes a dichotomy, which is constantly present to a greater or lesser degree, but which is a hallmark of the period of adolescence. On the one hand, we are driven to discover ourselves as individuals. We long to know what makes us different, how we can best express our special selves. We search for identity. We are driven toward personal freedom, towards youthful abandon, and unrestricted relationships, to a celebration of the expression of individual life within a dynamic and physical Olam Hazeh, this world. We have another drive, no less powerful. We seek to relate and to identity with the source and the goal of life. We desire meaning and significance through relationship with the eternal, through the transcendence of self. This is a drive which demands acknowledgement of reality and assumption of responsibility. At its best, it is a yearning to discover truth, to know God, to find Olam Haba, the world to come. Do you see the dichotomy? These opposing aspirations are symptomatic of the duality of each human being, who is both individual and part of a deeper whole. Each person is part of a klal, that's the whole, with a neshama taken from the totality of the kisei hakavod. Each individual destiny is bound up in the history of all creation and its goals. Yet, each person must serve an individual purpose and have a particular moment and place in consciousness. Each inherits a universe of his own. And to quote the Zohar, Rabbi Weinberg quotes, man in this world is the essence of klal and prat, totality and individuality. The restoration of this world is the restoration of klal and prat. That's Zohar to Shemos. We are affected by this duality not only in passions, but even in the cold analysis of questions, of priorities, balancing our responsibilities to ourselves and to others, weighing deliberation against spontaneity, juggling the many contradictory affinities within us, and we are easily led astray into loss of a delicate and subtle balance. Pretty good, huh? Mm-hmm. Rings true? Mm-hmm. Do we identify with both aspects, the klal and the prat? And we recognize that within ourselves we're often torn between the one and the other? And if we get too many messages about Klal and the conformity, we kind of get uncomfortable. And yet, if we get too much into our individuality, we kind of feel maybe disconnected, like maybe we're wandering too far. That is the dichotomy of Klal and Prat. And that is the war which rages which rages within us throughout our lives. And last week we took a look at one aspect of this in terms of defining the role of Jewish leadership, and we showed with some comments of Rabbi Volba, the great contemporary Mashgiach, although he's passed away, but the message that he had was that if somebody, a young aspiring leader, focuses too much on how he's going to change the world and how he's going to save the Klal, so to speak, chances are he's a bit misdirected. Chances are he has forgotten about his individual self. He is trying to find himself by masking it in his desire to change the world, save the world. That is a misplaced pursuit of Klal. The person thinks that he is motivated by altruism and is going to be greatly beneficial to mankind, when really what he really needs to do is he needs to find himself first. And the Torah approach to that is focus on your own avodah, focus on your own acquisition of values, of midos, grow in your own paths of Judaism, of spirituality, through Torah, through Ma'asim Tovim, and eventually you can reach the values, the sublime values of care and concern for the Klal. But it doesn't just happen like that.
It's okay with the tape?
Yeah, we're trying to minimize the questions. I'll just because many later. People... So if we can... Well, I'll definitely take questions at the end, but thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking. Anyways, that was pretty much last week. And I'd like to expand it a little bit, maybe become a little more general, because not everybody aspires to be a world leader. Since it is the Parsha Pinchas, I would probably say to you, I have a disclaimer to make, I have a topic I want to discuss, and I will dutifully try to find a connection to Pinchas. But I have to tell you, not on my own merit, but Rav Matthias Weinberg claims that this is very much the topic of Parshas Pinchas, and that Parshas Pinchas is perhaps one of the greatest illustrations of the successful synthesis of Klal and Prat. And I'm going to save that for the very end, so that we can appreciate what he's saying. And what I'm referring to is the Pinchas, the man. The opening section of the Parsha is really the second half of the story. In last week's Parsha, the prophet Bilam, unable to curse the Jews, our sages say he advised the people of Moab and Midian to try to undermine the Jews by getting them to sin, to send out beautiful women to try to seduce them. And in doing so, they could lure the men into idolatry and thus earn the wrath of God. And that's what they did. And it had become widespread. And there was one scene where the head of a tribe of Shimon consorted with a Midianite woman in public. Not totally in public, but he made it known that he was going to have a relationship with her. And Pinchas, a descendant of Aaron, goes after them with a spear and killed them right in the act. And the sages say that what Pinchas did was he fulfilled an obscure law in the Torah. The law says that if a Jew is publicly engaged in immoral acts with a non-Jew, someone who is zealous may kill them. Now, what does that mean, someone who is zealous? It means somebody, this is not a decision that a Jewish court makes, as all other corporal punishments are. This is an act that an individual does. He may not consult with anybody. If he goes to ask the court, what should I do? They're in there. They will say, we do not, that's beyond our jurisdiction. But the halacha, the Jewish law states that a kanoi, one who is zealous, may spear them. And that's what Pinchas did. And what is the reaction? God, in this week's parsha, says, because you have avenged the wrath, because the Jews were starting to become smitten by a plague, you have saved the Jewish people, the wrath has been calmed, and I hereby present you, award you with a covenant of peace for your all generations to follow. Hashem lauded Pinchas' act. He was the only one that lauded Pinchas' act. Everybody else was against him. Quoting some sources later on, it says the members of Shevet Shimon, the tribe of that man, that leader, attempted to kill him. Even the angels tried to push him away. There was a group that wanted to excommunicate Pinchas, and the entire nation jeered at him. So what he did was not accepted by the people, and even by angels, and God was the only one who thought that what Pinchas did was laudable. We'll come back to that at the end.
What he did was what?
Laudable.
Right. Okay, so Pinchas is known as the Kana'i, the zealous one. So back to our discussion. Let's talk about a simple guy. I have no aspiration to become a world hero, just a simple guy, very much in touch with my individuality, and yet I would like to actualize my membership of the Klal, my identity as being part of this whole. I do want to connect. I want to connect with God, with fellow man, and with my Jewishness. Mm-hmm. What is the formula for that? So, here's some free thinking. I think that the Torah itself provides the format for an individual, for a person, prati, private person, to connect fully to the Klal. And a familiar triad that we are familiar with are the three pillars: the Torah, the Avoda, and the Gemilus Chasadim. Study of Torah, service of God, and acts of loving kindness. So I think that we can see quite readily how these three branches of Torah life can really do the job of connecting an individual to the Klal. I'd like to illustrate them, each one, with a quote from another source. As far as Torah study, I would like to share with you a few paragraphs from a book I'm reading now, Anatomy of a Search. This is the story of Rabbi Akiva Tatz and his journey to becoming a rabbi. Do you know Rabbi Tatz? Did you learn from him in Eretz Yisrael, or was he already gone?
I think he was already gone.
Uh-huh. He taught at Or Sameach, right?
Yeah.
Okay, he learned at Or Sameach, and what he's going to describe will probably be very familiar to you. I've quoted Rabbi Tatz many times, from his other books. But then after we finished all of his books, we were looking at his actual story. So he describes here how he starts to learn Gemara, which is the mainstay of learning in the yeshiva. The grapple with Gemara is difficult at every level of expertise. Mind you, by the time he attends yeshiva, he is already a surgeon. He has already served in the South African army as a surgeon, as a medic in the the war-ravaged hospital. And the way he describes that is just grueling. But the grapple with Gemara is difficult at every level of expertise. It is exhausting, even physically. During my first months in yeshiva, I would come home daily more deeply exhausted than I had been as an intern, if that is possible to imagine. The preparation of a university degree is almost irrelevant. The intellectual level demanded in yeshiva learning makes university study pale into insignificance. And this is the experience of university graduates who come to yeshiva from technical and theoretical faculties alike. Medicine and engineering or philosophy, none seems able to prepare the critical intellectual abilities required adequately. I recall my first day in yeshiva clearly. I was a little offended at being assigned an 18-year-old charusa. After all, I thought I was a man of the world. University graduate, had studied medicine as well as literature and similar inflated thoughts. And here was a high school graduate to match wits with me. At any rate, I could not keep up with him. Not at all. In fact, I felt like giving up. Was I so stupid? His mind was so extended by his years of Gemara training, while I was being fooled by the illusion that at university I was learning to think, that there was no comparison between us. The whole of the first week was a painful experience. Every question I asked, he either answered immediately or patiently showed me how a little thought would reveal it not to be a question at all. I discovered that he and his contemporaries learned Gemara most of the day at high school and achieved distinctions in the secular matriculation examinations, although they devoted a short session only at the end of the day to secular studies. In other words, if one develops the young mind correctly, the syllabus of a secular high school is laughable in terms of difficulty and can be easily mastered in a minimum of time. I consoled myself later by recalling that he, his 18-year-old Chavrusa, went on to become one of the best in the Panovich Yeshiva. But it did not prevent a rude awakening then. What a tragedy that secular education deprives its children of the opportunity to develop even a fraction of their true greatness. Many times since then I have sat opposite a Chavrusa who is new to Yeshiva. He has heard of the challenge of Gemara, and he is thinking how his doctorate in philosophy from Stanford will wipe out my irrelevant medical degree and presumably my inconsequential years poring over these old pages, too. We begin learning, and as I patiently repeat the explanation of the sugya, the Talmudic topic, and watch his ego shrink, I remember how it feels. I didn't write this. So, learning Torah can connect a prat, an individual, to the klal. The reason why is so profound, and it doesn't seem that way, by the way, because it's not accompanied with inflated thoughts of egotism, is because, very simply, the Torah was written by God. And the Gemara, the Mishnah, this is the oral part of the Torah. It's Hashem's thinking transmitted to man. Moshe Rabbeinu was the mouthpiece. Moshe Rabbeinu was the faithful transmitter of Torah. But it is God's wisdom. God made us, and He made our mental capabilities, and He created this Torah, which is way beyond anything that a man could conceive. And yet we're capable of grasping it because Hashem has imbued us with that. So the prati, the individual person, if all to himself, may have illusions of brilliance. But until he attaches himself to the Klal, which is the true totality, the wisdom of God, who encompasses the world, he is not connected. He's not connected with the Klal. He may have many degrees, and he may be technically very gifted, or science or in liberal arts, but according to the Creator, he is not tapped in to that which makes him part of the Klal yet. And so that is a powerful way, and indeed Talmud Torah keneged kulam, the study of Torah is equal to all. The study of Torah, as we know, is the beginning of the path of the just. So that is avenue number one, which we have available to us to allow an individual to become connected with the Klal. Of course, that only happens if the individual uses his own unique capabilities. In order to learn, you can't just go and take a pill. You have to apply your own personal intellect and your own personal motivation in order to acquire it. So it is connecting yourself to the Klal via your unique self. And anybody who's learning is fully engaged, and it's very, very exhilarating. You feel yourself really getting connected. It is the ultimate synthesis of Klal and Prat. Okay, second avenue, Avoda, divine service. This is very often associated with what aspect of Jewish observant prayer? Okay, for that we turn to Rabbi Volba. We started from last week. This is actually an edition of the Mesilas Yeshorim, the Path of the Just, with comments from Rabbi Volba's writings. So somebody contemporary, edited this and took appropriate passages from Rabbi Volba's Sefer and ties it together with the Mesilas Yesharim. Where does he talk about prayer? Wait a minute. I know I put a page marker in it, but I don't remember which marker it was. Okay. Our Rebbe, Rabbi Volba, sees fit to use as an example of how one prepares himself for a mitzvah, the mitzvah of tefillah, prayer. In truth, there is great difficulty in fulfilling the mitzvah of prayer, which is termed avodah shebalev, work of the heart. It's not the work of the mouth. It's work of the heart, and that's a very, very difficult mitzvah. Why is this mitzvah so difficult? Asks Rabbi Volba. Kasher lehitrakez, is it difficult to concentrate? All kinds of images and thoughts that distract us. Well, if we have a difficulty concentrating, that is a sign that we have not cast aside our affairs. And we have not at all connected our personal affairs with what prayer is. We really should, if we want to succeed in our affairs, we should really put them on hold and throw ourselves into the prayer, and that's how we will succeed. But we don't do that. We don't make the connection. And thirdly, and maybe most importantly, we don't see the need to pray. That's probably the greatest obstacle. We don't see the need. And if he could sum it up in one utterance, he says the greatest barrier to prayer is ga'ava. Ga'ava is pride or arrogance. It's one of the midos. It's one of the negative traits that we studied in the Mesilas Yesharim a few weeks ago. In fact, it's the first one. When Rabbi Luzzatto says we are going to learn about the main, when he wants to talk about character traits, he says we'll learn about the four or five most prevalent negative traits. Number one is gava. It is pride. And he says that pride gets in the way of prayer. How is that? Because when a person's thoughts are occupied with his affairs, what he's really saying is, that's what's really important. My affairs are really important. In fact, they're the most important thing in the world. What I have to do is central to the whole world. That's what's keeping the world going. What I have to do, my business. Now, pride, when we talk about pride, we're not talking about, oh, so-and-so has a problem. He thinks he's great. Like it's a personal thing. It says, most people have pride. Because you know what pride means? Pride means that we are living under the illusion that we are independent, that we control our destiny, that we are the source of our own power, and we are in no way batel, subservient to Hashem. That's gava. That's universal gava. See, I don't associate, when I hear the word gava, I don't associate it in those terms. I think of gava as, well, so-and-so thinks he's better than I. What he's saying is, gava is a natural human condition. There's nothing more prideful than to think that we don't need God. That's human gava. And it may not be my fault. Maybe I was brought up thinking that. My father used to tell me, son, you got to take matters into your own hands. You got to get out there and work. Right? No mention of God. Okay, that's what I was taught. That's what our whole society thinks. Well, guess what? We live in a society which is based on gava, because we don't recognize our dependence on Hashem. We don't realize that we are vulnerable, and that anything that we can do, Hashem could take it away in a heartbeat. Those of us who have seen miracles can appreciate that. So there is a basic tendency towards human gava. It's a human condition, and prayer and gava are mutually exclusive. How can a person really take prayer seriously if he doesn't believe that he needs God? Think about it. I'm going to sit for 10 minutes and say the silent Amida, try to say these words, and I really don't think I need this. What I really need to do is get back to work. That's gava. That's universal gava. Not realizing the source of our success, the source of our power. If I really believed that God was the controller of my success, then if I had a lot to do, my wife has a beautiful poem. I think it was a secular poem, but it's about this guy who wakes up in the morning and says, I don't have time to pray. I have to do this, that, and the other thing. I can't pray today. And then they went through the day and all the obstacles that come in the way. And finally, at the end of the poem, the person says, I was so busy, I had so much to do, that I made time to pray. Because they made a transformation. Is that basically how it goes?
Well, everything goes wrong the first way.
You know? Uh-huh.
I don't have time to pray, so busy doing things, and everything just kind of goes...
Uh-huh.
And then the next day, realize, I have so many things to do, I'm taking the time to pray.
Right. And that's the transition between thinking that we're in control and thinking that we depend on God. Okay. All right. That's basically the point. So, what a powerful tool we have. We have actually a commandment to force ourselves, if we will allow ourselves to internalize what it is that we're doing, to force ourselves to come to grips with the fact that we really are dependent. When we stand and say the Shemona Esrei, that is how a person is supposed to be. That is how a prat is supposed to really relate to the klal. He's supposed to take his own expression, his own faculties, and is supposed to stand before the creator of the world and have a conversation. That is incredible. There's no better way, and there's no other way, for the prat to connect with the klal. And it's not a and it's not a nullification of the prat. No, it's the using the personal ability to connect with the klal. So both Torah is using my mind, using my faculties to hook into this incredible divine / human way of thinking, mind, and prayer is the taking of the personal faculties and talking to the creator of the world who holds the world in his hand. And then the third one, Gemilus Chasadim, acts of loving kindness. What does that do? That makes me connected with everybody else. Rabbi Volba also writes, here's where this is. He talks about the importance of the principle mentioned in Perkei Avos, no se ba'ol in chavero. Help your fellow man carry his burden. It's one of the 48 ways to acquire wisdom. And he says, I'll again paraphrase a few paragraphs here. As a Torah scholar begins to expand his border, so to speak, to set up a home, to take a position of communal leadership, and he becomes an ish klal, what he called, he described last week, as a klal person, and on. These are different stages in life. You know, you start off as a student. You're just trying to get by. But then you start to branch out. You go through different steps and different tachanot, different stations in life. Each station is different. Each one brings out a different aspect of our personality. Each one presents its unique challenges. But they all have one thing in common. Undergoing these challenges and taking on new experiences keep life from becoming habitual. Because life can become habitual, and life can become monotonous and mindless and heartless. He says, the greatest love that a person can have can go stale. The greatest position that one has can become uninteresting. Everything can become rote, breed boredom and contempt. So what do we do to keep ourselves from becoming stale and to suffer this spiritual death? How does life remain vital and vibrant spiritually? He says the key to keeping life vibrant and spiritual is no se ba'ol in chavero. Help somebody else carry his burden. This is a great service of God. This enables every step of life to be filled with excitement, with newness, with growth. If a person lives to be no se be'ol im chavero, to help his fellow carry his load, then he will not just be a professional in what he does, but he will be an ish chai, a living person. He will give himself to that which he does. He will constantly be elevated. As it says in Tehillim, Od yunuvun b'seifa, you can still be fresh even in your older years. Tishenim v'ranani mihiyu. These people, these righteous people, who are constantly striving to grow and give them themselves will be vibrant throughout their days. That is the secret to life. No sebi ol im chavera. There's no question that if a person lives his life to be no sebi ol im chavera, he has connected himself to the Prophet. And once again, it is through utilizing his personal, his individual personality, because everybody helps others in their own special way. A beautiful synthesis again of Prat connecting to Klal. So to sum it all up, the Torah teaches us how to find the synthesis between Klal and Prat. Depending on your orientation, you might have to stress one aspect over the other. To a leader who thinks he's going to save the world, we might have to emphasize, don't forget to work on yourself, to work on your prat. Stop painting those fantasies in the sky about how you're going to save the world. Just work on yourself. To somebody who is a homebody, who just wants to curl up in his own little world, we might have to emphasize the klal. Hey, you're not using your mind, you're not using your talents, you're not connecting with godly wisdom, or you don't realize that you can have a relationship with Hashem. You don't realize that you can expand your horizons and make your life vibrant by helping others. But the bottom line and the common denominator of all is that Torah life is about Klal and Prat together. They're inseparable. The Torah teaches us how to use every aspect of our personal individuality to become connected with the Klal. That's what the Torah is. The Torah is the how to fulfill both of those drives that Rav Weinberg teaches us. There was one line that I didn't read, and we've kind of alluded to it already, but he says, the drive that people have to identify with the source and the goal of life, the drive to be connected with Klal, if it is misdirected, if a person becomes a fanatic, kind of like this young person who has this fantasy of changing the world, it could either be a pie in the sky, or, he says, in a sadly diminished form, it may become a search for security and safety, a flight from true freedom. There are people that they go, whether to a yeshiva, and they become like a fanatic. And they will become extreme, and they will say, you have to adopt every single stricture in the book, and you become very indoctrinated, and everything is for the sake of Torah and for God. And yet, what happened to you? Where's your personality? Where's your friendliness? Where is your do you take time to take care of yourself? Are you happy? Do you have inner peace, which is what Rabbi Volpe says is the key to religious growth? Or are you just standing on some kind of platform in the name of Klal? That is an imbalance. The true synthesis is Klal and Prat together. And this is how he connected to Pinchas. Okay, ready? You know who this law, this obscure law of Kanoyim Pogimbo, that the zealous one who sees this act of desecration, if he is motivated to do so, he may go and kill them. But don't stop to ask the court. You either do it, or you don't do it. You know who that law is written for? That law is written for the perfect specimen of Klal and Prat. Torah has delineated areas where the moral rectitude of an act depends on the reactions and motivations of its performer. These are the areas of kana'ut, zealousness. The essence of the zealous act is that it requires putting yourself online. There can be no sanction from Beis Din or from society. Pinchas certainly received no one's blessing. Do you see how a person who lacks the completion, the perfection of his own individual confidence or just self-assurance could never do this? A person who can only act if he's told to do, he has to be told what to do, he would never be a Pinchas. Pinchas has to be somebody who's tremendously self-confident and self-assured. On the other hand, if he didn't care deeply and passionately about God and about the Jewish people, he would never do it either. Because quite frankly, it wouldn't bother him. What do I care what they're doing? That's their business. So the act of zealousness is like an eagle badge, if you will. It is a test for somebody who is so completely identified with his own individuality and at the same time completely identified with his identity with the Klal. That is what Kana'us is, and that's why it's 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 100,000 that could do what Pinchas did. He says that Pinchas had inherited certain traits from Yosef. Yosef was the... Much of this book is describing the development of Yosef as a key figure in the Torah. Yosef being a very, very highly developed prat, because he was able to be alone in the world of Egypt and maintain his connection to Torah, to his father, to holiness. That is also a strength of Klal and Prat. He says Pinchas had that same makeup. And miracles were performed for Pinchas. In other words, the ultimate is not to become a robot where you don't think and you just indoctrinated with this mission, and it's not to become somebody who just does whatever they want because they're their own person. It's somebody who takes the best of both, the best of Prat and the best of Klal, and synthesize it within his being. That is an accomplished person. A person who is accomplished in Torah, in Avodah, and Gemilus Hasadin, all together. And this is, so Rabbi Weinberg would say, this is not incidental to Parshas Pinchas, but this is illustrated in the greatest way by the act of Pinchas. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear questions and comments.
Yeah. Yes. In addition, I think with the zealot, I mean, you said he was acting for the people, for their benefit, but doesn't it also have to be like purely for the people? If he has even like the littlest bit of self-interest,
right,
it
right.
doesn't work, right?
Right, right.
So that makes it even more the case.
Well, because then you get fired. As soon as you do it from
right.
that,
right.
Right. But the Klal has to be totally in one part and the Prat has to be totally in the other part.
You know, there's the commentators speak about, there's another incident in Malachim where Eliyahu did an act about zealousness and he was rebuked. And in the Sefer by Rabbi Nachshoni, which we studied years ago, famous question is, what was the difference between Pinchas and Eliyahu? How come Pinchas got this award and Eliyahu didn't? Even though I thought Pinchas and Eliyahu were really the same person. Okay.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But maybe it's two different carnations. But I think that was the answer, that there was a little bit of personal midos with Eliyahu, whereas with Pinchas, his nature was not to be that way. He is... he is attributed back to Aaron. You know, it calls him Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
And because Aaron was a peace lover, and Aaron would spend his life trying to make peace and settling disputes. So they say, the Mefarshim say, that Pinchas really by nature was a peace lover.
So
that's why this was not, expression of personal feeling. It was for the sake of Hashem and the people. Pure.
I do have a question. I think in the Midrash, doesn't it say that he looked to Moshe and said, isn't there this law about the Kenai?
Mm-hmm.
And Moshe said, that's right, and may the person who read it do it. How does that not come out as being asking advice?
Well, maybe he asked the advice, but Moshe would not tell him. And Moshe just put it back on him and said, you know, you can clarify that law, Kanoin Pogimbo. What it means here is that you're not allowed to go to the basin and say, should I kill them?
Mm-hmm.
And basin says, if you ask them, they will not say yes.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What's the source of that law?
It's in the Talmud. It's part of the Sanhedrin 82a. If one comes to ask in court whether he is allowed to be zealous, we do not sanction it. Furthermore, if Zimri would have turned and killed Pinchas, he would not have been culpable, for Pinchas was pursuing him as an individual with intent to kill. In other words, it's really considered to be kind of like, zealousness is not like carrying out the death penalty. It's kind of like, in a sense, holy murder. Right? And God will decide if it was holy enough.
After the fact.
You're on your own.
And it depends on your motivation. So it's that's why Rabbi Weinberg is saying it is the ultimate expression of individual freedom. But freedom which is shaped and motivated by love of God and the Torah and the Jewish people. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chasadim. It's the ultimate, I don't know if I'm even really bringing out the point as he does, it's the ultimate of personal act which is shaped by Klal. Okay, I know that Akiva had a question way back, so let me take his question.
Sure.
Dr. Schultz, thank you.
Okay,
if you still have it.
I do. Well, it's a comment, but I'd love to hear your response to it. That's where the question would come from. I really appreciate the concept of the balance between Klal and Prat.
But thank you.
I
do too.
But I feel...
Just ask these people.
I'll back up. I believe that if we err on the side of Prat,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, that it could come out looking in different ways. For example, I might believe that I'm erring on the other side. I might be striving for zealousness,
mm-hmm.
you know, standing for God, but like you said, on that platform.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're going to be really honest, you would have to call that an error on the side of Prat, because there's gaiva. But I...
What do you mean error on the side? I thought you meant error on the side of Prat, that if you have to emphasize one or the other, it's better to be on the side of Prat. Is that not what you're saying?
I'm venturing the opposite.
Oh.
Maybe I'll slip away from the Hebrew.
That question goes down to different styles of different yeshivas. Do you know that? There are some yeshivas which give more emphasis to Prat and some yeshivas which give more emphasis to Klal. And it actually stems from two different approaches to Musar. Some Musar approaches are man is lowly and he better fix himself up. He better get with the program. Some approaches to Musar is man is great. He should be encouraged to develop his uniqueness. And these were really different. It traces back to the altar from Slavutka and the altar from Kelm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess what my question
is... Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that was it. But I mean, my question is, if you really are devoted to an alliance with God or cleaving to God, really, mm-hmm. truly, not talking about it, but really doing it, is God going to allow you to bypass your own uniqueness and your personality? Whereas if you're on the other side, you can surely forget about God.
You can forget about God if you think you're on the side of God, too. That's the point. That's what Rabbi Volba is saying. People that think they are saving the world are just, they're in a dream world. They're really not saving the world. They're just trying to
elevate themselves.
What I'm saying is that whole question is erroneous in a sense, because we cannot claim to be perfect in our motivation to be cling to God. Who are we to say that? We can't deny our humanity. We can't deny our desires and our, you know. So at best we can say, Hashem, help me, you know, help me purify my motives, help me grow, help me develop myself and my capabilities, and help me connect with you, you know. And the way we do that, we have the tools: Torah, Avoda, Gemilus Chasadim. If we use those tools, we'll get there. We really will get there, and our self will not suffer, and our connection with God will not suffer. This is all the philosophy. In practice, we've got the tools; just have to use them. Dr. Schultz.
At the end of your talk, you asked if you're making your point clearly, and it's not entirely clear to me. So,
okay, thank you.
I need your help. These three elements that you spoke of: the study of Torah, prayer, acts of loving kindness. Their goal and direction, is it a two-part thing to have a relationship with Hashem and also to develop your personal attributes to balance call and brought? Is it both?
Oh yes, yeah. My claim is that it is both.
Okay.
For example, when you learn,
it's neither one or the other.
It's made to you, like when you study, like Rabbi Tatz was saying, when you study Gemara, so you are utilizing your personal intellect, but you are developing the divine intellect that God gave you. So it is using the prat to develop it and klal at the same time. And the same thing is true with prayer, and the same thing is true with acts of loving kindness.
If I can just ask a little bit more. At the end of Haftorah Beilach,
last week. Okay.
I learned this from Rabbi Friedman because I was in his shul last week. And he pointed out that this last phrase is very significant. He said, "He has told you, O man, what is good and what Hashem seeks from you. Only the performance of justice, the love of kindness, and walking humbly with your God." Important statements, but not the same as the three elements that you spoke.
Can you please repeat the three elements?
Surely. Only the performance of justice, the love of kindness, and walking humbly with your God.
That's all three.
Yes, it doesn't
justice,
include study of Torah.
Justice is Torah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because justice, the decision of the of a case, adjudication of justice requires Torah thinking.
I see.
Walking humbly with God is avoda, the absence of gaava, pride, and acts of loving kindness is gemilus chasadim.
Great.
Thanks for your question. Yeah, Arthur and then Dan.
The klal in this context refers to Jewish people, or all people, or
Jewish people. Judaism is really the only manifestation of klal there is. Ultimately, the klal emanates from God. By giving the Torah to the Jewish people, God was saying to you people, you have a chance of discovering who I am. The other people, we tried for 26 generations from Adam till Moshe. We tried offering them the Torah. We tried seeing how they would act throughout 26 generations, and they did not buy into it. And therefore, I'm giving you the Torah, hopefully you will buy into it, and then you will be able to discover what the klal really is. In the absence of Torah, it is impossible to have klal. Sure, you can have associations. You can have people that meet together and have common goals. But they're not really a klal. They don't really have anything on the soul level that unifies them. They may have an alliance in a certain area, but they're not really.
So therefore, for instance, acts of kindness to non-Jewish people. I mean, I'm very active, for example, as in a volunteer role in the community in downtown Atlanta with mm-hmm. deprived children, neglected mm-hmm. children, and so forth, things like that.
To meet Jamie, maybe on site.
But they're 100% non-Jewish. So the question is, do I not get any credit for that?
Oh, you get credit. For sure you get credit. First of all, you're developing yourself. Okay. I would say that it's something to consider that, you know, it's a very good investment if you put some of your resources and some of your time and talents into Jewish causes, because then you're helped furthering, you know.
I'll do by way of my checkbook.
That's fine. Keep it coming. Yes, and Dan.
So really, Pinchas is an ultimate ideal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something you strive for, having all three components. He happened to be an individual who had all three in the right
mix.
And yet, I find it interesting that only Hashem recognized the positivity of his actions. Mm-hmm. No other human mm-hmm. being did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes this, to mm-hmm. me, it has to be only an ideal. Because no other human being saw or could appreciate what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And
very good point.
So we just...
Very good point. That means that it's possible to have a great people and they still miss mm-hmm. that ideal. They can look at Pinchas and think that he's a murderer. But God says no. He's a peacemaker.
It's also the definition of a true leader. Mm-hmm. To do something for the klal that no one else realizes until later on.
Right. There's a big difference between the klal and public popularity.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Somebody who lives for public approval is not, that's not klal. That's pride and honor and all the bad stuff. You know, Pirkei Avos says, stay far away from politicians. You know, they're going to appear to be helpful when they need you, but when they don't need you.
Mm.
So, politicians are not klal people. They're like the people that Rabbi Volba described last week, that they're, in the name of klal, they're really just trying to further their own personal... Yeah. Okay, well, look forward to seeing you all in a few weeks.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And
thank you very much.
Please enjoy studying the Parsha on your own.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.